So I already introduced you in words, Zhechuan Zheng, my co-author and PhD student. You see him here. And actually the main subject, the main target in our work was to try to do to solve at least numerically the multi-matrix integrals in planar limit. So the general problem is you have a few integrals over Hermitian or unitary or other matrices with exponent and minus trace of potential, which can depend on all these matrices in various ways. Usually the polynomial potential works well with many applications. And there are many applications like mesoscopic physics, two-dimensional quantum gravity, statistical mechanics on planar graphs, and actually QCD in the large end limit via Iguchi-Kawai reduction is also simply a multi-matrix model, and so on and so on. At large end, these integrals are functional and rarely exactly calculable. And also very difficult for numerics. The only universal method is to solve them is Monte Carlo usually. Then there are some solvable examples. Some of them well known, some not that known, but say the emblematic example is the one matrix model, of course, integral over one Hermitian matrix. In the large end limit, it's known that with polynomial potential, we just count the planar graphs. If we take a slightly more complicated two matrix model with simple interaction AB, it corresponds to putting easing spins on the vertices of this graph. A and B vertices correspond to spin up, spin down, and this way I once solved the matrix model on dynamical graphs. One can define more general solvable two matrix models. For example, instead of trace AB interaction, one could take trace of any function of AB, and one can solve it at least in the large end limit by the character expansion method. Okay, but many more integrals are unsolvable, although interesting in physics. We studied in our work particular interaction so that we replaced here trace AB by trace of commutator AB squared, which reminds some QCD-like actions or matrix theory in matrix string theory, etc., etc. So we found this model interesting with nonlinear with non-Gaussian potentials, V of A and V of B. We applied the matrix bootstrap numerical method. It's inspired by conformal and S-matrix bootstraps, but I think we significantly improved it via the so-called relaxation procedure, which I will explain you later. There are a few. So the matrix bootstrap was pioneered, I would say, in the papers of Anderson, Kruczynski, and Lin. And now there is a little list already of followers, including us. First of all, to be pedagogical, I will start from a very simple example suggested to me by Zhechuan. Let's compute the the integral, the moments WK, which I defined as average of powers of this non-Gaussian distribution measure. So let's first notice an obvious inequality that if we average a linear combination of powers with arbitrary coefficients, it defines a a positive quadratic form in alphas. Yes, for arbitrary alphas, it's a positive expression, of course. And if we write a matrix of this quadratic form, it will consist of these moments with various case. It will be this kind of the matrix, and it should be positive defined. So let's then, instead of computing the integral, which can be of course computed exactly in Bessel functions, but let's try to compute it approximately by first by writing the kind of loop equations, or simply the equations which follow from the translational invariance of the measure. So there is this relation between various moments, and of course it's a linear relation in this case, very simple one, which can be easily solved. And we use the symmetry, only even moments are non-zero in this case. And using loop equations, we can express higher moments through, all higher moments through W2, the second moment. And the positivity of correlation matrix imposes, we can say chop off the matrix, the correlation matrix by some finite size. Let me, so you take some minor like this, and you use only the equations up to W4, yes, where W4 enters. That's a, or you take a greater size. We will call this size a cutoff size of our procedure. And then we impose the positivity of this the positivity of this matrix, which is this minor, and we find some relations on W2. Because everything is expressed to W2. We find the upper and lower limits, which of course, in the limit when we take bigger and bigger size of this minor, and they will tend to exact value. The upper and lower limits will, the difference will collapse, and they will coincide with the exact value. Okay, and one could, in principle, give a proof of this statement using the so-called Hamburger moments problem, or rather the solution of this problem. Hamburger moment problem is actually a basis for our bootstrap method. It's sort of the justification of our method. And the theorem solving this problem goes as follows. If you have a set of positive number of real numbers mk, an infinite set, there exists a positive Borel measure mu such that the moments of this measure mk's are given as a moment of the moments of this measure if and only if the matrix mk plus j minus 2 is positive semi-definite. Moreover, if the growth of this mk with k is not more than factorial, the measure is unique. And it's immediately applicable to our integral, but even more interesting, it can be applied directly to the one matrix model, and we can sort of justify, at least for one matrix model, the bootstrap approach. The method is, of course, of cutting off the number of moments, taking the all the moments up to some moment number lambda, where lambda will be a cutoff, and cutting correspondingly the correlation matrix and imposing the positivity. This imposes actually rigorous equalities in the sense that if we increase the cutoff, the result can only improve. The upper and lower limits can only approach more and more to the exact results. And unfortunately, it's not immediately applicable to multi-matrix models because they have a more involved structure of the correlation matrix. But at least it inspires us to use the correlation matrix as a method to add the missing information from the finite set of loop equations. Okay, and this application gives some promising results. So what practically is this numerical bootstrap? So we take the correlation matrix and chop it off to the size lambda plus one times lambda plus one, and we minimize and maximize the W2, at least in the case of our simple example, by keeping the correlation matrix positive defined. Then we find this minimal and maximal value. And for example, a simple program gives for the cutoff time 10, so for the moments not higher than 10, of the order not higher than 10, and say for g equals 1 gives already like 5 digits precision to the exact result, which we know, of course, because it's just a bunch of Bessel functions. And graphically, it looks like increasing lambda. So these colors correspond to lambda 2, which is, of course, a very bad approximation. Lambda 3 is blue, is already much better. And dotted line is exact. Lambda 4 already is quite good. And lambda 10, you wouldn't already distinguish this corridor of inequalities from the exact value. So that's about this model. And now, if you don't have questions here, I hope it's a simple example, I will pass to a slightly more interesting model, the one matrix model. So we want to compute the one matrix integral. It's here. And it's known that if you go to the eigenvalue decomposition times this unitary matrices omega, you end up with integral over only n eigenvalues with the effective fraction, which is the potential of eigenvalue plus it should be sum of xj's plus the piece coming from Dyson measure, sum of logs xi minus xk square. This problem already can be solved using subpoint approximation because we reduce the number of variables. And the result is actually the picture for this subtle point approximation is similar to two-dimensional Coulomb charges in one-dimensional effective potential. But on the complex plane X, when we look for the solutions, we find not only the solutions with eigenvalues, with real eigenvalues as it should be for the Hermitian matrix, but also, and usually this eigenvalues fill the minima of the effective potential, but also some of them fill the maxima of the potential, and of course the cut turns into the imaginary direction. So this is these two axes are imaginary and real axis of x. And the solution, of course, is very well known. The resolvent of this distribution contains the square root, which gives you the polynomial, which defines the positions of the branch points here. And the charges filling the minima and the maxima. I wanted to say that we will call physical solutions which have only real cuts. For example, if you have this cut, the solution is unphysical. But for real cuts, it's physical. Then we can introduce the density as imaginary part of resolvent standard things, and we can define also the moments, integrating the powers of x with the, this density. So the moments of this traces of matrix powers. Those are, of course, real numbers for physical solutions. So it smells already like we can try to apply the hamburger problem here. So the resolvent of such physical solution is of course analytic outside of the of these cuts. So it's analytic everywhere in the complex plane. And the cuts are finite for the solutions we are interested in. Conversely, it's easy to see that if G of Z has such complex cuts, some momenta and thus the whole correlation matrix are non-positive or even complex. It's easy to prove it, and it's almost obvious. Okay, so with this knowledge, we pass to the study of the correlation matrix of the one matrix model. Here it's just a reminder of standard things about one matrix model, but let's now study the correlation matrix. We take, we define the matrix operator, which is the linear combination of powers up to some n. Again, we average the trace O dagger O, which is positive defined, of course, and find the quadratic form, which is with the positive, with the matrix WKJ defined in this way. And you see, it again depends only on K plus J, like it should, like it is in the hamburger problem. And of course, this matrix should be positive definite for positive definite. And actually, now when we apply the hamburger problem, we conclude that for one matrix model, at least in the limit when n goes to infinity, when we consider all powers, infinite number of powers, the positivity of correlation matrix is in one-to-one correspondence with reality and positivity of the eigenvalue density. So this is one of the results of our paper, that actually the method of the bootstrap, the matrix bootstrap method, renders only physical solutions in the sense that only minima are filled by eigenvalues, and we have only real cuts, only the cuts on the real axis, only the normal distribution of eigenvalues with positive density. Okay, this is at least some, this brought us some understanding of the efficiency of this method. And of course, of course, for the multi-matrix model, the problem is this relation to the Hamburger theorem is lost, and we have only to hope that the similar method works well. Okay, we actually apply this the numerical bootstrap to one matrix model. Again, introducing the cutoff in the highest moments, the highest considered moment, and in the size of correlation matrix. We take the example of quartic potential and obtain the loop equations in the standard way for these moments, W to K, in this case only on the even moments, the odd moments are zero. We have a nonlinearity. A new feature is a nonlinearity here. We obtain, so later I will obtain the multi-matrix loop equation, so I don't explain how it's obtained here. I think all of you know, actually. Now we introduce the correlation matrix, which appears to be just of the same type as in Hamburger theorem, WK plus J minus 2. And we declare it positive definite for a given lambda. Then we solve the loop equations for W case as functions of W2. Here it's possible. All of them can be are just functions W2, and impose on them equalities from the positivity of the correlation matrix. Inequalities from the positivity of correlation matrix. In general, it gives exact for a given lambda upper and lower limits for W2, in the sense, as I said, that increasing lambda, you can only improve these limits. And for example, here there are the results of this numerical bootstrap compared with analytic solution. Now the line, unlike this simple integral example of single integral, the line of physical solution goes up to negative g's. So for the potential, for positive g's, you have this picture, you have the potential, completely stable potential field by eigenvalues, but when on this, for this piece, it's W2 as a function of G. But this piece corresponds already to this situation, when you have still a real cut, but the potential is unstable. At infinity, it goes to minus infinity. And of course, at the point where the last eigenvalue, the edge eigenvalue touches the top of the effective potential, it breaks down and the bootstrap doesn't work either. So this essentially has been done in Lin's work. We just repeated it. And we also studied the case of the broken X to minus X symmetry. When you change the sign to minus instead in the quadratic term, you get this potential. And here you have two phases. If G is bigger than some G critical, all your eigenvalues, you have a single cut, symmetric cut, and numerical bootstrap is presented here graphically. By increasing the cut of lambda, little by little, you diminish this island around the exact point, which is known analytically, of course. And for lambda equals 8, for example, it's already indistinguishable here from this point, the island. If the symmetry Z2 is broken, the situation is as follows. You have more eigenvalues in the left well than in the right. Then you get this kind of the picture. You get a line of solutions, because as I said, the bootstrap predicts all solution. We can use bootstrap by this method all solutions which have real cuts. And here it's it's for different g's. So it's W2, the second moment as a function of g, as a function of W1, which is now non-zero because the symmetry is broken. So the even odd momenta are non-zero. Then you have this picture. And for smaller GC, it's this picture. And it seems that the exact solution is rather approached by the upper limits, the maximum of this corridor. Of inequalities and not the minimum, which can be of course also taken into account in the final estimate of the result. Okay, so this is about one matrix model. So here is, if you have some questions on this part, I will pass to the two matrix model, which
can I ask a question?
Sure.
Okay, and just to understand, how is this symmetry broken? Because here there is only quartic polynomial. So practically, what happens?
It's because you are in the large n limit, so it's a functional integral. If you have you have simply this picture, you feel the you feel by eigenvalues two wells in not in equal numbers, and there is a parameter here, for example, the difference between the numbers of eigenvalues, mm-hmm. and this line corresponds to this changing parameter. Say somewhere in the middle where W1 is zero, it means that you have equal levels and equal numbers of eigenvalues. But all of them are solutions of the saddle point equations. And as we know, this all those solutions are well defined up to exponential corrections in N. So the tunneling of eigenvalues is the effect of tunneling is of the order e to the minus n. That's why we concentrate ourselves only on the precisely planar solutions, large n solutions. We study the solutions of loop equations.
Okay, so in the second situation, you still have two cuts in the large n limit, but yes. Like the cut on the left part of the well starts later, or like doesn't start in zero, so because there are still two cuts on the two sides or not?
Yeah, there are here in this solution, there yes. are two cuts. There are okay. two cuts, so you have two branch points. If you find, for example, the corresponding resolvent, you will just have two pairs of branch points here between this and this and that and that. And they will be not symmetric.
Mm-hmm. While in the previous situation, that's not the case, right?
Here, so, of course, up from some G large enough, you simply fill the whole well. So it cannot be asymmetric here. That's why the phase transition from this symmetric phase to symmetry broken phase. Because it's functional integral, it's not... not a simple integral. You cannot have it in a simple integral like we studied before. If you take g negative in the single integral, of course, it simply will diverge. And you will not find any solution. Okay?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, then if there are no more questions here.
Oh, let's sorry. I do have a question similar to the one by Enrico. So, if I take first n finite, then these moments are what they are. There's no line. It's a point, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if I wanted to define this line starting from finite n and then take the large n limit, should I think that instead of integrating with just the action, I have some delta function that tells me that n of the eigenvalues must be to the left and m must be to the right? Because the definition of the moments is one definition, right? Then it's one number. You just define whatever they are one number.
They're that's true. Oh, that's true. But essentially, if you continue it, you will discover only this solution. Yes, symmetric solution. You have to do this limit. And I mean, you have for finite n, you don't have this exponential barrier, and of course, they will just settle in a symmetric way. So one has to find a trick how to do this kind of limits in a way that you end up with this solution, yes?
Okay, I guess the question is, what is the trick? Is there a trick? Is there a simple trick?
I didn't think about it. For example, you can make the potential non-symmetric and somehow at the same time send n to infinity and restore the symmetry. It's the first thing which comes to my mind, but why not this way? So you deform also the potential in a symmetric way, and you restore simultaneously the...
I see. Okay, so some stresses, some order of limits. You first start with a symmetric, then there's a single one, and then you smoothly deform, but you take n to infinity first, so that the eigenvalues cannot leak.
Something like that, but of course, the life might be more complicated than I say. Okay. If there are no more questions here, I pass to the maybe to the most interesting part of our computations. It's the bootstrap for two matrix model. And first, the method is the same. We use planar loop equations, so it goes only about the Large and Hooft limit, and combine it with the positivity of correlation matrix of momenta. First of all, let's define if matrix words. Since we have already two matrices, we can multiply them in all possible ways, and we, for a given number of A's and B's, we have certain number of different words. Then we define the multi-matrix models, moments, like single trace averages of these words. Why we take into account only single trace? Because there is a large N factorization. We know that the average of products of two traces factorizes into the product of averages up to 1 over n square corrections in the Hooft limit. Now we just write the word identities, which in this case become the loop equations. Namely, we take trace over word, insert a derivative with respect to A or B. We should try both, of course, to take both both cases, then we simply act by these derivatives. It's a full derivative acting on everything, on the word and on the potential. Then the result is zero. And when we act explicitly on the word plus on the potential, we find the following loop equations. In the left, there is the action of derivative on V. It then enters into the same trace with the word, so it creates a collection of words, the same number of terms as the number of terms in the potential, a collection of new words. And on the right, when DDM acts somewhere in the middle of words, it splits it into two traces, and there is a sum. Where, of course, it splits only there where the matrix M, for example, if the matrix A, it acts only on the matrix A, of course, inside the word. So you get this kind of equation with where on the right you have nonlinear terms. Like in one matrix model, all these momenta were labeled by a single label. Here it will be already a huge collection of various words. So this equation is very, very complicated from the very beginning. For numerics, so we have to learn how to study it numerically. And for numerics, we limit, of course, the length of words again by a cutoff. We simply say that we consider only words of a length up to lambda, both A and B. The overall sum of all insertions is lambda. And of course, you have now many more words than equations. It's obvious that apart from some very rare cases, like the two matrix model, the standard two matrix model with A-B interaction. But how to complete the missing information? And here the proposal of Lin is that the matrix, the positivity conditions on all the moments can give us this missing information. So it's a sort of an extra condition to the equations, which makes it converging to the physical solution. But of course, we should study it at finite cutoff, at finite length of the operators. So let's go now through the basics of this Bootstrap for two matrix model. So the model, first of all, we define the model which we'll study. This is this model with a commutator AB square interaction and quartic quadratic plus quartic terms in the potentials for A and B. This model is unsolvable. At least to my knowledge, it is unsolvable. Although the all the models which were considered in Lin's talk, not in Lin's talk, but in Lin's paper, are solvable as we understood with Zichuan. Maybe there is not such big difference to demonstrate the method, but still we prefer to work with unsolvable model to get something new. Now the loop equations relate moments which have all these combinations of A and B. So these are the first terms, the first moments, the lowest moments, but of course they quickly, with the length, it quickly becomes a very large number. Now what we do, we consider this vector up to a finite, we cut off this this vector by finite length of words. So remember W will denote the vector of all these moments. And we impose again the positivity of the correlation matrix up to this certain length. I call it lambda here. I don't know why, not L here, not lambda. So again, we just take the linear combination of all these of all the words which are under the traces, take trace of O dagger O of such operator, and we get the quadratic form, which is of course positive defined. So O is simply the linear combination of all these words. Okay, now we define the bootstrap procedure. It reduces to the following optimization problem. So if we want to minimize some quantity in the one matrix model, it was just W2. Here it could be any linear combination of lowest moments like W2 plus W1 with so arbitrary coefficients. It can be or it can be just W2. So this is just the notation for the physical quantity to minimize and maximize. And we minimize it, of course, with respect to the vector, to this vector, which we denoted here by Wj. And all these Ws are subject to loop equations. And the ith loop equation looks like a quadratic term with certain quadratic form A, I for the ith equation. So it's just W transpose and W are vectors, which are contracted to the matrix, which is the matrix which defines the loop equations. You have some linear terms, for example, from the potential, some constant term, and then we impose the positivity of the of this correlation matrix. Now the problem is that the loop equations are nonlinear, and in the optimization theory, this is a bad starting point because it's a highly non-convex problem in general. The existing, as I learned from Zichuan, so now some technical questions you should address to Zichuan. The existing non-linear semi-definite programming algorithms are inefficient when you have this non-linearity. And actually, we propose the so-called relaxed bootstrap, or rather, it's known, as I again learned from Zichuan, it's well known, this method in the optimization theory, which replaces the nonlinear optimization by standard linear SDP. How to do it? Here is the method, the relaxation method. Instead of So we minimize, again, we minimize some physical quantity, a combination of lowest moments, a few lowest moments, for example. And instead of nonlinear loop equation, we write the following linear relation. We just denote WK, WJ as a matrix, XKJ, and contract it both of its indices with this quadratic form A. So formally, X is just a new variable, and the whole equation is linear, yes, with respect to X and W. But we also add the following positivity condition, that the matrix, which consists of, you know, of, this here you have one, here you have this X as a matrix, L by L matrix, and also you have the column WT of these moments, and the row W here. Hope you understand how it's constructed. You have L vector here, L vector there, and one here. And we impose that it's positive, positive definite matrix. And also we impose, of course, the positivity of the correlation matrix. Now it looks like a standard SDP problem, optimization problem, but what did we do by replacing these two, our loop equations by these two equations? Actually, we introduced the following inequality instead of the equality. So instead of putting X equal to WWT, which would be precisely this relation, we take the inequality, X minus WWT is a positive definite matrix, treating X as an additional variable. So by sure complement, this condition can be written as the following, as precisely that condition, because the sure complement is what the positivity theorem for sure complement says, that if we have such a matrix, you see, you have submatrix Z of some size, submatrix X of generally different size, then two rectangular matrices Y and YT of corresponding sizes. And if Z is positive definite, then this matrix is positive, and this matrix is positive definite, then the sure complement, which is just this combination, this X minus matrix product YZ minus one YT, is positive definite. So that we can rewrite this relation through that relation. As Z, we take one simply, one single element. As Y, we take the vectors W, the vectors W, and X is this matrix X. So we replaced the equality, the which would produce nonlinear loop equations, by this positivity condition, by inequalities. So in the hope that when we increase the cutoff, the equality little by little becomes, the inequality becomes equality. So we'll, of course, as a numerical procedure, it's much more efficient. You can take much bigger sizes of your correlation matrix, et cetera, et cetera. And so in this way, we transformed a nonlinear and non-convex problem to a much simpler SDP, for which the numerical solvers are much more efficient. And the loss of information might be compensated by greater efficiency of SDP solvers and larger lengths of operators considered. And let's apply it to the two matrix model. Okay,
I do not understand. So you replace an equality by an inequality? and a new problem is simple to solve. But how do you know that a new problem is saturated by the equality?
We don't know it actually, but you don't know it even for the correlation matrix. You have no guarantee that positivity is enough to converge to the upper and lower limit, would converge to the exact value. The same here. You simply hope that now your exact value is squeezed between all these upper and lower limits already defined by two sets of inequalities, and it's how to say, it's like I would imagine it's like least squares method. Yes, you write some action which is sum of squares of your equations, and you try to minimize it. Yes, mm-hmm. Something like that. I don't have a better vision of it, but maybe Zichuan can say a word. I don't know. But it seems to be quite a standard method in optimization. And also, I learned from this science that the determinant form is always convex, because your variables enter linearly. All the matrix elements are linear functions of your variables. In this case, the problem is convex. So essentially, you are in the convex polytope, and you look for the minimum and the maximum. I'm not sure I answered well your question, but maybe me myself, I don't understand it well.
I understand. It's because you are like in an annulus and you replace it by a ball to make sure that you can, right? If you know you are in an annulus and the solution will be at the boundary of the annulus, you can replace it by a ball because then you can travel faster, right?
Maybe. I'm not sure I directly see it. Maybe. Mm.
I
got some simple examples in our paper, which might be more inspiring than my intuition.
hi.
Yeah.
I have some comment here. I think the key that the method works here is that the exact solution. I mean, the bootstrap. If we push the cutoff of the bootstrap to infinity, what is the solution remaining? Well, for most of the case, there is only one solution remaining. So the allowed region is convex. So this somehow justifies why our relaxation method, bootstrap method, works well, because we just relax the allowed region to some convex region. But we know that it will finally converge to a convex region, because a single point is a convex region. So that's fine. But when there is some symmetry breaking, the relaxation method, the naive relaxation bootstrap method, doesn't work well. So we need to scan over some value to make the allowed region some discrete point, so that our relaxation bootstrap method will work. So I think the convexity of the exact solution is the main reason that the relaxation bootstrap method work.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, let me then present some very explicit form of in which of application of this bootstrap to our two matrix model. So we are solving this integral, so we are computing the moments of this integral, double matrix integral, and at the cutoff lambda equals 4, we have actually 14 loop equations on 20 moments, plus the nonlinearity beta, which appears here in three equations. So we have 14 loop equations, but of course there are more moments, and we treat this beta as a separate variable. Although normally it's this only nonlinearity which appears at that cutoff. And of course, we consider the completely Z2 symmetric solutions for simplicity here. Now, instead of the equality, these equalities, we simply replace it by inequality. Beta is bigger or equal to trace A square square. Form, yes, that this matrix is this matrix is positive definite because one is positive and the next minor is precisely this in this identity, this inequality. So this is the simplest example how we replace the quadratic term by this convex condition inequality. Okay, and then in virtue of now linear loop equations, all the moments and beta can be expressed through seven basic ones, these ones. So 21 quantities can be expressed through seven quantities. We plug it all in the into the correlation matrix, and the correlation matrix has three sectors because we have these symmetries. Z2 to the three symmetries A to minus A, B to minus B, A to B. We have this even sector with even numbers of A and B, odd with odd numbers, and even odd when one is even, one number is even, another is odd. And for example, the correlation matrix, which is defined again in the same way, you have here 26, the length. Of your vector is 26. So you define again the positive definite quadratic form and its matrix, its even odd sector looks as follows. You simply impose that it's more than zero, but before you, of course, you express everything through the basic seven moments via this linear loop equations. And together with the relaxed loop equations, this numerical bootstrap gives already at lambda equals four, which we consider here, it gives a couple of digits of precision. Say this moment is squeezed between these two numbers. And the time of calculation on the laptop is just 1/10 of the second here, already very good. Okay, so this is the description of the procedure. Now I show the results for large lambdas.
For positive G, Volodya?
This is for positive G, yes. It's all for this stable situation when you have the absolutely symmetric symmetric solution. Yeah. But already in one matrix model, Eduard, you saw that you can also do it for negative G's up to the critical point because the cut was still real. Similar situation is here, but of course we know little about the cuts. We cannot see the eigenvalue effective action explicitly. Okay, so we applied it to a more or less generic point where G and H are one. Let me remind you that what is G and H? It's this H is coefficient in front of commutator square and G is the quartic coupling. So for this generic point, which is not different from the neighboring points, we get the procedure which converges quite quickly to the value to this cross, which corresponds already to lambda equals to 10 or 11. And see the in the colors, the gray, yellow, and rose, how things quickly converge with the increasing cutoff. And here, this is the graph of trace A4 moment, the quartic moment over quadratic moment versus quadratic moment. Now, at lambda equals 11, which is the largest calculation and the most precise calculation in our bootstrap numerics, you get these limits, which are like 6 digits precision. Seems to be quite good to us. 6-digit precision for a generic point in the phase space. Again, I insist that these are exact inequalities. If you compute once this integral exactly, the exact values cannot get out of this corridor. It can be only improved with increasing lambda, which is actually a great advantage with respect to the Monte Carlo, yes? In Monte Carlo, you still have statistical errors. You know only with some probability that you are in such and such corridor. Here, you know precisely. Okay, then some data, it's still quite quick. You can compute one point in a few hours, for example, or on a single laptop, but here it's much longer calculation, which was done by Zichuan on our not very powerful cluster in the Ecole Normale. Okay, so then phase diagram for symmetric solutions. I'm already close to the end. 5 minutes, okay.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So the phase diagram in terms of these couplings H and G, we tried H again here and G is the quartic constant. We tried to define what is the allowed region for solutions. So where, for which values of G and H the solutions are possible. And from our bootstrap computations, we excluded, strictly excluded again by our inequalities, this region of G and H. In white region, we still, so it can be still improved, and maybe this boundary will move further and further for larger lambda. Here lambda is 8, the cutoff. And this blue area is actually curious. When you send H bar to zero, it's sort of a classical regime where you can minimize with respect to the matrices instead of, you can exactly define the where for very large H and G, there is excluded area. It's actually here. And it's interesting that this curve goes through two exactly calculable cases. Actually, this model can be solved, of course, when H is zero, then it decouples simply into two one matrix models. So we know the result, we know everything. And for G equals zero, the model is again solvable. We studied it once in, Hoppe studied it, and we studied it with Nekrasov and Kostov in our old paper. So again, these red and green points are exact and up to, our curve passes through this point, which shows that we are already quite close to the limiting curve in this phase space, where in this area we don't have solutions, and over it we do have. Here, okay, I will not maybe stop for too long time on these graphs. It's trace A square as a function of H over G. It's curious that our bootstrap here works well for, it works quite well for positive H's, a bit worse for negative H's, because it gives more of instability if H is negative here. And same for G's. For positive G's, it's quite good, but there are many instabilities for negative G's. But still, we approach to some line. I don't want to speak much about it. It's already very technical things. Here is the result for which actually is the final result for the phase diagram. And also, we checked various solvable cases. Again, H equals zero, two decoupled one matrix models. And we solve it with a new method. You see, we have A and B, we have all these huge numbers of moments of various kinds. Instead of solving single matrix model, we solve it in this sort of perverse way. And still our relaxed SDP gives excellent results from, so which converge very quickly to this black line, which is exact solution here and there, even for negative Gs up to the critical point, of course. So the price to pay was this relaxation, but the advantage was that we had much we could go to bigger lambdas, etc. And it worked also very quickly. And here it's G equals zero. As I said, the model solved also. Again, we show some convergence here. Okay, anyway, the last comment is about the solutions with broken Z2 symmetries. When we change the quadratic terms to the signs of the quadratic terms, then you have these wells, apparently, although you cannot you cannot have the picture in terms of eigenvalues. Of course, you understand that there should be some symmetry breaking in this case. And here is the H equals zero case, which is the two decoupled matrix models. Again, we get a nice coincidence with the exact line, I mean, quick approach to the exact line. Say for lambda equals nine, already we have this yellow island for which the upper limit almost coincides with exact line. So somehow upper limit appears to be the best approximation to the exact result, much better than lower limit. And now the last picture is the picture already for generic values H and G, a couple of generic values where we find this is trace A square versus trace A, which signals the symmetry breaking, of course, the non-zero trace A. And the black line is not very visible here, but it seems that the best approximation of our bootstrap is the upper limit. And indeed, this for lambda equals eight, this line stabilizes and seems to be a very good approximation to the exact value. Okay, then actually this is almost the end, apart from some conclusions and prospects. So hope I convinced you that matrix bootstrap is an interesting alternative to Monte Carlo for computations of functional integrals, not only matrix models. And it gives exact inequalities on physical quantities, exact in the sense I explained you. And it's an efficient way of solution of large N loop equations in the Toft limit, for the models in the Toft limit. The method inherits some ideas of conformal and S-matrix bootstrap, but it's a new direction aiming at different kinds of physical problems. And to overcome the non-convexity of non-linear loop equations, we proposed to use relaxation, which I explained. There was an interesting proposal of the use of master field method by in recent paper, Domelo Koch et al. For those maybe for who remember these old times, like Yura Makeyenko, you remember what is master field. The matrices which that the whole solution corresponds to fixed infinite matrices. The fields can be fixed infinite matrices. And the method has some advantages, but it doesn't give exact inequalities. It just gives some approximation to the result. And also it's very nonlinear and non-convex, their approach. But maybe a combination of our and their approach can be very promising. And an important target, of course, for all this stuff is, in my opinion, the Large and Lattice Young Mills theory. Via Migdal-Makeyenko equations, Makeyenko-Migdal equations, and actually the pioneering paper of Anderson Kruchensky a few years ago already started this study using Bootstrap, but I think the results are still quite poor and better tools are needed, and the tools are needed to be improved. We are still very far from universality and precision of Monte Carlo, but at least it's an alternative, because it's ridiculous that for so many years the Monte Carlo is the only method for the study of QCD on the lattice. And we need new ideas to inject some additional information about higher moments and loop equations, and to reduce the size of the correlation matrix to make it really efficient, this method. Here I stop, and thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for a very nice talk. So let's open for questions. I don't know if, Jacob, do you have a question? Or?
Yeah. Oh, yes, I want to know what you really would like to know is, the resolvent. Would it be possible to apply the bootstrap method to calculate the resolvent also for coupled models as you did?
Good question. We thought about it with Zichuan. The problem is, of course, that the loop equations on the resolvent are in the one matrix model are very efficient. You can just solve them as algebraic equations. But of course, to bootstrap a function and not numbers is much more difficult. Yes.
But for the two matrix,
this is a function.
Huh? Yeah. Sure. But for the two matrix model, you would like to know the resolvent.
Sure, but you can write the equations. They will be again a chain of complicated equations for the generic two matrix model. It's the same problem, and it will be an equation on multi-resolvents, as we call them. You have more and more insertions of one over, say, x minus matrix. So the generic fluctuating quantity, which you have to test, is very complicated. Maybe it can be approximated by some polynomials or whatever, but it doesn't look simple. I don't have clear ideas how to do it. Here you deal with the numbers. Yes, you have loop equation, which for each quantity is a number, okay, for fixed couplings.
Okay, thank you.
But this is something which doesn't let me sleeping, I mean, to use it for resolvents.
to understand fully, with one matrix model, thanks to the Hamburger theorem that you use, you can use the positivity of the correlation matrix, which is equivalent to the positivity of the density of eigenvalues. Mm-hmm. For two matrices, you don't have the equivalent.
Exactly.
So the fact that it works possibly even in a region of parameters in which the integral doesn't make sense, but the loop equation do, is sure. An assumption. At this stage.
Yes, indeed. There is no
is
theoretical basis under this method in the case of two matrix model.
Sorry.
Even for the solvable model, like standard two matrix model with AB interaction, tried to think about it. Maybe it can be done. Maybe it can be proved that the method works. But even that is complicated. And the Hamburger problem hello?
Volodya, you hear me?
Yes. You don't hear me? Hello?
I could hear Volodya very well throughout, but Edward was breaking up from time to time.
Do you hear me, Eduard? Because Eduard is frozen on the screen. Probably yes. He lost the connection. Yeah. Hamburger theorem can be proven using the orthogonal polynomials. I think I understood once how to do it, but in two matrix model, there are orthogonal polynomials. Maybe one can prove it as well. But hello, Eduard? Hello, Eduard? You resurfaced. Mm-hmm. I started saying that.
Very small.
Do you hear me? Yes.
I'm back. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear the answer.
Now, do you hear me?
Yes, very well.
Good. I wanted to say that the proof of Hamburger problem is goes through orthogonal polynomials. And maybe for one matrix, for two matrix model, for standard two matrix model, it can be also done because we have orthogonal polynomials there. But I just, with my little attempt, I didn't yet figure out how to do it.
I see. So there is mathematical work pending.
Sure, of course. There is no solid basis under this approach.
But it's very convincing. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Valadia, just naive question. So, can you do you find something that distinguishes solvable models for non-solvable? For example, even if you just compute the moments, you could then a priori approximate the resolvent, right? Resum the moments. I mean, is there something special about the resolvents or the models that are solvable versus these ones? Do we learn something new about these models, that their densities are special or they are different or they are not semicircle or, I don't know, something new that we learned that we did not know about these models because they were not solvable and therefore, and then
I didn't notice anything like that because even in the case, for example, when this case H equals zero, when the model, our model splits into two non-interacting one matrix models, you get the graphs very similar to the generic case of generic couplings. And so, frankly speaking, maybe the Chuan noticed something, but I didn't notice looking at all these results.
There is something. Actually, I made some comment in the appendix of our paper. That is, I want to summarize it as the loop equation, the structure of the loop equation for solvable model is more simple.
Of course.
Than the unsolvable model. And usually the bootstrap method for solvable model converge much faster than the unsolvable case. That's not easy to understand. Yeah, that's not easy to understand, but indeed. If you are considering a two matrix model that's decoupled one matrix model, like in our model, you take the coefficient of the commutator square term to be zero, then it is two decoupled one matrix model. Then there are very, very few independent moments. And if you take the quartic term vanish, then there are much more. And even more general case, we have a non-vanishing commutator square and a non-vanishing quartic. Then it is, there is even more. So it seems that the structure of the loop, or the complexity of the loop equation, it somehow indicate whether this model is solvable. but I don't have a criteria to quantify it.
No, but indeed, in the standard two-matrix model, you can the loop equations are closed on a very narrow subset if you choose them carefully. But the question is, say, in the numeric bootstrap, do you notice, for example, the difference in convergence speed for h equals zero and h is non-zero?
That's the case. Mm-hmm. You can go back to see the see your slides. Like in the convergence case, you can find a very different thing.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry. Analytical solvable case. You just compare the convergence rate of different h equals zero and d equals zero, then you can see it.
Like which graph?
Yeah, you can. Top left and the top right.
Top left and top right.
Yeah, on the top left, this is highly solvable, which means that gamma equals 5, the numerical bootstrap is already indistinguishable from the analytic.
Mm-hmm.
And g equals 0 case, it is less solvable. So like
still
when
solvable.
Gamma, it is not. I don't prefer to say it has the same solvable level as h equals zero, because in g equals zero, you cannot really solve all the moments.
Mm-hmm.
You can solve some moments.
Ah, that's true.
But you cannot solve all the moments. But for h equals zero, you can solve all the moments analytically. Mm-hmm. That's the difference. So you can see that in g equals zero case, the convergence speed is much more slower. You can see it. It's
mm-hmm.
obvious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for the more general case, like H doesn't vanish and G doesn't vanish, it is even more slower.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this somehow indicates the level of difficulties.
Yeah, but generally, yeah, of course, it's only a hint, but generally one should see somehow, try to answer Pedro's question. Maybe the general approach would be to see what sets of moments are more important and what are less important. Maybe there are subsets of all these moments which somehow appear to be decisive for the solution.
Yeah, so I said I can't quantify it. I don't have a very very clear criteria.
Okay, yeah. Thank you, Zichuan, helping me.
Thank you. Any other questions?
I have a very simple question about like how do you see any way to extend your methods to non-polynomial potentials, or also to non-Hermitian, non-unitary metrics, or as it seems to me they are strongly relying on this. On this
non-Hermitian in the sense that all this maybe the positivity property will break down. No.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. That seems quite dangerous to.
On the other hand, even if you have, for example, say you have non-unitary operator O, which is the sum of powers, but O dagger O should be positive still. So that's the first thing which comes to my mind. At least one can, even for non-unitary model, one could have but the action will be if the action is non-unitary, and then we are in a bad shape, I think.
Let's assume that that the action is unitary, and what about non-polynomial potentials? Maybe it's more interesting for
non-polynomial. This is, you have an infinite sum. No, that is okay, I think, because you can. If you,
if instead of a polynomial, I have a ratio of gammas, for example.
Yeah, the loop equation immediately doesn't, I mean, it has infinite sums over all kinds of, over all lengths of operators, yes? I don't know. This is, I cannot immediately give a recipe. Because you cannot just simply put you put all the moments from some power equal to zero. It's not what we have in this method. So you immediately have infinite set of moments.
Yes, I understand. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the problem is at the level of loop equation already, indeed.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the most interesting example is Young-Mills on the lattice. And then you really have, the only problem is that the number of loops and the number of loop equations is huge because you have already, say here you have AB. So the words consist of two letters in Young-Mills, even in two dimensions. Already it's like four letters because it can turn back. Yes, you have U and U dagger. And simply then all the equations and positivity conditions are very elegant, but the only problem is that there are too many.
I have some comment here.
Yes.
From my point of view, the positivity condition in our bootstrap method is nothing but the condition that we are integrating over the Hermitian matrix. So if you are not integrating over the Hermitian matrix, like you are integrating over unitary matrix, then the correlation matrix, I mean the matrix that defines the positivity, it will look different. So it doesn't matter what kind of matrix you are integrating over. That's the answer of one of the question. For the other other kind of the question, like if your potential is transcendental, non-polynomial, the first thing is for a general multi-matrix model, even if the potential is it's polynomial, it is non-solvable sometimes. So I propose we do it step by step. Like we first solve the polynomial case, then we solve the more general case. And for the more general case, I have some proposition actually. In that case, we might not take the moments of polynomials. Like in the polynomial case, we take the polynomial. For the more general case, we need to find the more general base. That's my proposed solution, although I never did it.
Yeah, but it's not obvious how you will do it in this quadratic part of the equation. It's not, to me at least, it's not obvious.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. We are way over time. So let's thank Volodya once more.